Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, this is The Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be listening, live in Los Angeles, iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and FS1, Greg Cosell, 1 hour. We are absolutely loaded today. Joy Taylor is joining me. Can't wait for today's show.
Morning.
Didn't sleep well, have some Red Bull. I am ready to rock today. I want to start my show with this. Advertising works. That's why companies pay thousands and millions of dollars to have ads during the Super Bowl, during big college football games, during the NBA, Fox Tonight, Giants, Eagles on Fox have big ads. Companies paying tens of thousands, millions of dollars for ads. Marketing, promotion, it can change, skew, manipulate people's opinion. The greatest marketing campaign for an athlete I've ever seen was two companies. Nike and Gatorade both created brilliant campaigns that fooled us, that manipulated us. They were both about Michael Jordan. And they made you feel that Michael Jordan did it all by himself. Remember the Gatorade commercial, Be Like Mike? Here it is.
Sometimes I dream that he is me. You got to see that's how I dream to be.
So good.
Be like Mike, because Be Like the Chicago Bulls doesn't sell Gatorade. Be like Phil Jackson's triangle offense doesn't sell shoes. They made you believe it was all about Mike. Michael Jordan, by the way, was 0-6 against the Celtics before Scottie Pippen. Michael Jordan was 1-9 in the playoffs before Scottie Pippen. Michael Jordan, the greatest basketball player most people believe ever, didn't do squat before Scottie Pippen. Even today, Tony Kukoc, Dennis Rodman, Scottie Pippen, Phil Jackson, Horace Grant, Steve Kerr, it's like they did not exist. But Michael didn't do anything before he had the best rebounder of his generation, Dennis Rodman, the best coach ever, Phil Jackson, the best shooter, three-point shooter of his time, Steve Kerr, Horace Grant, a power forward that made all-star teams, the best Euro available, Tony Kukoc, and an all-time top 50 player, maybe even better, Scottie Pippen. But Nike and Gatorade made you believe it's all about Michael. It never was, and it never has been in basketball. Do you play well with others? Magic needed Kareem and Worthy. Bird needed McHale and Parrish. Michael needed Scottie and Rodman. And Isaiah needed Lambeer and Dumars and the great Chuck Daly. Everybody's always known that. Except there's always a couple of guys in the NBA. Carmelo Anthony, Derrick Rose, and currently Jimmy Butler that don't. They want to be like Mike. Instead of be like the Golden State Warriors and play well with others. Jimmy Butler now went into practice, been holding out with the Timberwolves yesterday. He ripped the GM. He ripped teammates. He went crazy town. I called a source last night in the NBA that's as good a source as this league has. He told me 2 years ago, Jimmy Butler, who blew up yesterday with his team and wants out from Karl Anthony Towns, wants out from Andrew Wiggins. Really good B-plus NBA players. Cat maybe an A-. He wants away. He wants his own team. He wants to go to Brooklyn and be the man. And my source told me last night, 2 years ago when he was in the Olympics, he didn't fit. Players didn't like him. He was the least talented guy, finished that Olympic experience with a worse field goal percentage. Kyrie Irving was there. Boogie Cousins was there. Guys that have egos. And Jimmy's was the biggest. And he didn't play well with others. Ah, Jimmy, you want to be like Mike? Be like the Warriors. Sacrifice shots and ego to be part of a great community. Be like Chris Paul, James Harden. Be willing to give the other guy shots. Elevate the community over yourself. I love the NBA, and the great ones always figure it out. They need help. Phil Jackson sat Michael Jordan down and said, "You want to beat the Celtics? Pass. Be a better teammate." Michael listened, and Michael became a legend. LeBron James, "I want to play with Chris Bosh and D-Wade." Kevin Durant, "I want to play with Curry, Clay." There's always a couple of guys in the NBA that still want to be like Mike. And what you want to be like in 2018 is the Golden State Warriors. Play well with others. Jimmy Butler, after practice yesterday, explaining his uncalled for outburst to his teammates, his coach, his GM at practice.
"I was honest. Was I brutally honest? Yes. But I think that that's the problem. Everybody's so scared to be honest with one another. If you didn't like the way that I handled myself in practice, one of the players come up to me. Somebody say something. Anybody. I'm not going to take it offense. It's not personal. And that's all I was out there doing, was competing, playing hard, doing what I'm supposed to do on the basketball floor. I just want everybody to be happy. I want to win. I'm sorry if I go about it the wrong way. I really do apologize."
No. No, you weren't doing that. You were separating yourself from others. You didn't want to be part of a community. You see yourself here and everybody else below you. And that's why you'll probably end up wasting years, ask Carmelo, wasting your talent, ask Derrick Rose. I'll always defend the great player who joins other great players, because his message is, it's about us, not about me. Hopefully Jimmy Butler learns. I want to segue to this. Tonight, the New York Giants and the Philadelphia Eagles on Fox. That's the network I am currently paid by, but I'd watch anyway. So the Giants play the Eagles. Talk about must win for both teams. Michael Strahan, one of the great players and a teammate of mine here, was talking about Odell Beckham, who came out earlier this week and with an interview with a lady named Jelena Anderson, kind of critical of Eli Manning. And Michael Strahan said, "I think Odell's definitely a leader. Eli's never been the guy who's going to be a vocal guy. But there are still a lot of, maturity parts that have to happen on Odell's part." And Michael said, basically, you got to be careful what you say about and who you talk about, because, you know, you start speaking for the room. And even if you are a good guy and a good leader, it may not necessarily play well. In other words, Michael Strahan was basically saying, you know, there's certain things you don't want to talk about publicly. And that's where I bristle. And I'm hearing this from everybody. Great players like Michael, media people, former players, current players. Whenever I hear this phrase, "you cannot say blank publicly," I always push back. When I got into this business, I was told, "you cannot talk about politics." The number one cable TV network in America is Fox News, built about talking politics 24/7. MSNBC, politics 24/7. CNN used to do news. They now talk politics 24/7. The most watched cable networks are all politics. "You can't talk about religion." I was told that one too. That's interesting, because the most provocative show, talk show on HBO, is Bill Maher, who has built a reputation questioning, mocking, dismissing religion. That's his brand. You can talk politics, and you can talk religion, and you can question Eli Manning. At this point, Eli Manning is more myth than reality. The last 4 years, he has been a below-average quarterback. And I want everybody to think about this. Peyton Manning, let me say it slowly, the better of the two, Peyton Manning was benched for Brock Osweiler. And Eli can't be subtly questioned publicly? I got a job 30 years ago in Las Vegas as a young sportscaster. A guy said to me, "never criticize Tark." I left that market the most well-known sportscaster. My brand, the only guy that would go after Tark. When people tell me you can't say things publicly, head into that tsunami. Cable TV is dominated by politics. Bill Maher's made a very lucrative brand, very, very lucrative brand, talking religion. And you can question if you're the face of a franchise, Eli Manning.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
I think it was the second highest rated NBA preseason game of all time. LeBron, Rondo, Lance Stevenson, Brandon Ingram, Kyle Kuzma, but mostly Lonzo Ball and LeBron played. So I've got a couple of impressions I had from last night's game. Number one, Lonzo Ball is bigger and stronger than he's ever been, and he still can't shoot. The shot is just, it is what it is. He still can't shoot. But he is a bigger, stronger, he's an incredibly long basketball player, very good team defender, tremendous vision. He'll work in this league, but the shot hasn't changed. It's not going to change that much. Ben Simmons, by the way, is never going to be a great shooter either, is what it is. But here's my takeaway beyond that, is that I've watched every Tom Brady game and every LeBron important game in the last decade. And it's very well established. They're kind of the same guy. They're arguably the greatest ever at their position, quarterback and basketball player. And they both have preferences. They both have formulas. They both have templates. And they like, they demand certain things from their teammates, or you no longer are a teammate. Tom Brady likes guys who run precise routes. Wide receivers with good hands that run precise routes. And you have to go to a spot. And if you drop it, Tom's pass is not being rewarded. You will not last long. Figure the playbook out, get to the spot, and catch the ball off a precise route. LeBron James is similar. He wants to play with veterans like Brady that reward him and his passes hit the three. That's the Lakers' problem. Lonzo Ball and Rondo at point can't shoot. Lance Stevenson's tough, can't shoot. KCP, long athletic, hit and miss. Kyle Kuzma, not an elite shooter, very good young player. It is very obvious the Lakers were 29th in three-point shooting last year and didn't bring in any more great shooters. In fact, the guys that I brought in, JaVale McGee, Rondo, and Lance Stevenson, 3-for-3, can't shoot. It's very obvious LeBron is going to rely heavily on Brandon Ingram, the kid from Duke going into his third year who can shoot and is getting better shooting every year as he gets stronger. But Tom Brady, we saw him after Detroit before Julian Edelman got there, before the running back Sony Michel, the rookie, figured out the playbook, when Cordarrelle Patterson wasn't in the right spot. Remember Tom Brady after Detroit. He wasn't mad. He was just living in his reality. Remember this Brady moment?
I mean, we're not scoring enough points. We're not executing well enough on a down-by-down basis, certainly at a high level that, you know, we should have our expectations set at. 2 weeks where, you know, you get behind and just not make enough plays early in the game. And we're behind and we're just fighting uphill all day. So it's no way to play football. It's no way to, you know, execute at a very high level. I mean, we're just not doing anything well enough.
That's what you get. He wasn't angry. He was frustrated. Then Julian Edelman came back. Julian Edelman, he's always in the right spot. Then Sony Michel, the rookie running back, month in, is now in the right spot. Cordarrelle Patterson, Josh Gordon, month in, playbook, now in the right spot. LeBron James, like Brady, has a template, has preferences, and is demanding. And when I watched them last night, it's going to be LeBron's team. Now, the Lakers have some strength. They're long. They're going to be a very good team defense. They're athletic. They're quick. They're eager. They're coachable. And they have the world's best player. But it's going to be LeBron and Brandon Ingram. That's what you're going to get. LeBron, by the way, hit a three last night and made sure all those young guys got a look at what he's going to be demanding from them.
LeBron going to fire it up. It'll count if it goes! And it goes! A three to end the half for LBJ!
LeBron looked at that one for about 20 seconds after it left his hand. He said, yeah, I like it, and the crowd likes it as well.
That's what LeBron's going to need for Brandon Ingram, because he's not getting it from Rondo, and he's not getting it from Lance, and he's not getting it from JaVale, and he's not getting it from KCP, and he's not getting it from Lonzo Ball. This team has some strengths, but it's going to be LeBron and Brandon Ingram. That's going to be what you're going to see. And I think that's going to win a lot of games. And the team has strengths. But Brady and LeBron, they have preferences. They have templates. And they're demanding. And you got to hit the shot with LeBron. And you got to hit the spot with Tom. Or they get very frustrated and let you know it.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Very unfortunate moment on the show. I thought it bordered on unprofessional when our college football guy, Joel Klatt, came on wearing a uniform. I don't know if I'm going to let him back on the show. This was the moment. Roll the tape if you could. I didn't sleep well last night. You're such an obnoxious.
Yeah, buddy. How was last Sunday?
Oh,
what's up?
Oh, a bunch of field goals.
Hey, two wins. What? Two more wins than they had in 600 previous days. Guess what Mayfield has? Cop video, junk, and two wins. Bang.
Very obnoxious. I'm not into message boards, Twitter. Here's what you need to know about the Cleveland Browns. Here's who I pay attention to. And by the way, Baker Mayfield on the internet liked that moment. Here's who I listen to. Vegas. Vegas this weekend has the Chargers, one of their Super Bowl favorites, and the Browns, pretty close to a pick 'em. Phillip Rivers going to be in the Hall of Fame. Joey Bosa, two good backs. Pass rush. This is a very good Chargers team. Vegas has Browns, Chargers, pretty much a pick 'em this weekend. Well, Colin, that's because of Baker Mayfield. No, it's not. Baker Mayfield right now is completing 59% of his throws. By elite standards, that's weak. But Sam Darnold, I don't want to hear about other quarterbacks. The Cleveland Browns, Vegas is telling you, are a coin flip against a Super Bowl dark horse. Baker's passer rating's 81. That's lousy. Three TDs, three picks all year. That's lousy. I'm not saying Baker Mayfield's going to be lousy. His current numbers are below average. What about Sam Darnold? We're not talking about Sam Darnold. We're not comparing him to Sam Darnold. Baker Mayfield with this roster. Baker Mayfield, just take his name out of it. 58% completion, 81 passer rating, three TDs, three picks. That quarterback with this Browns roster, Vegas has as a pick 'em against the Chargers. The story, what Vegas is telling you is, Cleveland's got dudes. They've got three legitimate running backs. Three. Carlos Hyde, Duke Johnson, Nick Chubb. They have a stud young pass rusher, Myles Garrett. Jarvis Landry, slot receiver. Stud, most targets in the NFL. They have a elite young rookie cornerback. They have a tremendous young tight end. They lead the NFL in takeaways easily. This roster is stacked. And this is what happens. Houston was terrible for years in baseball. And then they get a number one pick and a number one pick and a number two pick and a number four pick. And you look up right now and Houston's favored probably to win the World Series. Not the Dodgers and all their money. Not Milwaukee with the best bullpen. Not the Red Sox with the greatest year. It's Houston. Okay. That's what happens. Forget comparing Baker to anything else. Vegas is telling you that a quarterback in a passing league, in a passing year, that's completing 59% of his throws, 81 passer rating, 3 TDs, 3 picks, they're a pick 'em against LA. That's all you need to know about Baker Mayfield. I think he's going to be way better than those numbers. I think Sam Darnold's going to be way better than him, his numbers. I think Josh Rosen's going to be way better than his numbers. And I think Lamar Jackson at some point won't come in for three plays a game. He'll come in for 60 plays a game. But that tells you all you need to know about Cleveland this year. It's not the Baker Mayfield story. They're overcoming very average quarterback play. The Jets roster stinks. Cleveland's roster, loaded. And they're going to carry Baker Mayfield probably for the entire year. Probably for the entire year. Here's something else I want to talk about. So did you guys see I said yesterday I wasn't going to talk about Dez Bryant anymore. I said, I'm not talking about Dez Bryant anymore. Okay, I'm going to have one exception. He started talking about me yesterday. So there's an old rule in the NFL. There's an old rule, an old saying, the tape don't lie. The tape don't lie. Be careful what you put on tape. Dez Bryant right now is unemployed and talented still. What has Dez Bryant put on tape in the last 6 months, 8 months, 9 months, last year? Remember in the NFL, the saying is, be careful what you put on tape. The first thing he put on tape is, oh, he can't separate, and he doesn't have an expansive route tree. Everybody can see it. The second thing he put on tape was the Amazon Prime series, where he didn't get along with his wide receiver coach. The third thing he put on tape is, he shows up to the Cleveland Browns, headphones, tank top, looks uninterested, nothing's changed, not a grown-up. And the fourth thing he's put on, quote, tape, social media, responding like a child. Yesterday, he's firing back at me. Hey, Cowherd, how did they make me in Dallas, sir? You know the Cowboys have had other players. And he swore and stuff, and I won't put that up. Dude, you are exactly where you should be in the NFL. Be careful what you put on tape. You have put four things on tape slash your resume. You can't separate and you don't have an expansive route tree. You're a nightmare in the room with your wide receiver coach. You show up to the Cleveland Browns looking like you don't desperately need a job or desperately want a job. That sort of matters. And you also fire back nightly on any criticism. Dez. Every day, every response is justifying guys like me who are critics. With all your talent, and you can still play week six, no takers. And that's officially the last time I talk about Dez Bryant.
What's up, everybody? John Middlecoff, 3 and Out podcast on Colin Cowherd's podcast network. If you like Colin's show, you will like mine. I talk a ton of football. This week got a big show. Drew Brees breaking records. Jerry Jones, Jason Garrett. How long will that last? Mike McCarthy and Aaron Rodgers' relationships falling apart. Again, you can listen wherever you find your podcast. Just look up 3 and Out with John Middlecoff on Colin Cowherd's podcast network.
First it was Cole Beasley, and then it's been, Dez Bryant, who's not even playing for the Cowboys. And now it's Allen Hurns, wide receiver for the Cowboys, new guy from Jacksonville. And he was talking with Josina Anderson, a reporter at the other place, and he said, Dak's second interception was the worst play call you can make against that coverage. He also said the blocking wide receivers, Dak deserves blame too. Uh-oh, here we go again. He went on to say, if Dak should have audible, I'm not sure. I don't think Dak had a chance. I'm not sure if he had the authority to check out that play. But like I said, as far as the other thing, there was one snap and a two-man. Everybody knows versus a two-man, you can't run deep sixes. Basically, Allen Hurns is calling out Dak Prescott, and Cole Beasley called out Dak Prescott, and Dez Bryant called out Dak Prescott. We got ourselves a trend here. Folks, quarterbacking's hard. Okay? I don't know if Dak doesn't have the ability to audible or his coaches don't trust him to audible, but the reason Tom Brady keeps dominating is because if all these quarterbacks were cars, Tom would be the one or two that has GPS. He sees the traffic jam. He sees the accident, and he gets off the freeway and moves to another exit. Everybody else like Dak is, you know, going to the glove compartment trying to grab their Thomas guide and figure it out. That's why Brady wins games. He audibles out of problems. Remember when Brady and Jay Glazer talked a couple years ago before the Atlanta Super Bowl, and he said, "You can't throw anything at me anymore."
Every time I go on the field, I feel like, all right, well, I know what to do. I know how to do it. I know where to go with the ball. And, you know, football is in some ways easier now for me than it ever was because, you know, it's just I've been doing it longer. I've had the experience. And, you know, hopefully that experience can pay off.
By the way, the great separator at quarterback is not arm strength. It's not size. It's not mobility. It's pre-snap. But you can't see it as fans. I can't see it as a member of the media. But what Brady can do is audible out of trouble. And rookie quarterbacks, generally, coaches don't give him the playbook. Andrew Luck was a rare guy that they just gave, Bruce Arians gave him the playbook and said, figure it out, you went to Stanford, you're smart. But Big Ben, they did a lot of babysitting with Big Ben for a couple years in Pittsburgh. They did not unveil the playbook. Phillip Rivers did some babysitting with Phillip Rivers. I don't know if this is Dak can't do it, and I don't know if it's Jason Garrett doesn't trust him, but we got Cole Beasley, we got Allen Hurns, we got guys now. We got guys who have been in this league who have made catches saying it's Dak. And this is why I say New England's so tough to beat. They have two coaches. They have Belichick and they have Brady. And most teams don't even have one great coach. They have two great coaches. I had Brian Cox on yesterday and I asked him, who's the best young quarterback you ever faced? Dak's obviously a young quarterback. I said, who's the best guy you ever faced? Listen to his answer.
Probably the best young guy I saw in my playing days would have to be Peyton Manning. You knew it right away how good he would be, even though that record. You would play in the game, and you would hear him make all these calls, so the game to him was more mental than physical, and you knew that you couldn't outsmart him from day one.
Didn't talk about his arm, didn't talk about his size, didn't talk about his mobility. What did he do pre-snap? That is the difference between Brady, Breeze, and 90% of this league. They got a GPS system. Dak doesn't. Brady's like, oh, accident, 4 miles ahead. I'll take this road. Dak drives right into it. And that's, you got multiple guys now, multiple receivers. These are not even anonymous sources. These are guys that are receivers. Yeah, that was bad. Yeah, we're wide open. Yeah, it's our quarterback. So you got yourself a problem. Either Dak can't figure it out or the coaches don't trust him to figure it out. And neither answer is good.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
All right, Greg Cosell's my guy. 35 years, NFL films, breaking. It's the best meat sandwich in American sports radio today. Greg Cosell, sorry for that dissertation, that manifesto.
It's okay. I'm a big Foghat fan. It's okay.
Okay, let's talk. Patrick Mahomes struggled against the Jags. What did they do? Was it just they have better personnel? Well, what did the tape say?
I think we have to start with the premise of your question. Are we dealing with Patrick Mahomes as if he's a great player, or are we dealing with Patrick Mahomes as if he was in his sixth NFL start and he's a young player still learning how to play?
Yeah, the second one.
Okay, so let's understand a couple of things. He played against a defense that's very sound in what they do. There's not a lot of mystery to what the Jags do, but they're very sound in what they do. They don't normally beat themselves on defense.
Yeah.
We're also dealing with a quarterback who came into this league as essentially a sandlot and playground player who has mechanical issues that needed to be worked on that can crop up at any time, yeah, which did in this game. We're dealing with a quarterback in Mahomes who has a tendency to play outside of structure and leave the pocket. So all those things kind of came together, and it's not as if he had a poor game, but he just didn't have a great game. But I think that Mahomes leaving the pocket when it's not necessary is something to watch for as we continue, because that's the way he played in college.
Let's shift to Sam Darnold, who I've said before, I think he's the youngest of the quarterbacks. He only had 27 college starts. I think it's going to be a choppy year for him. They don't have a great O-line, running game, tight ends, or wide receivers, although I do like Robbie Anderson. What did the tape show after not doing much against the Jags? What did the tape show against Denver on Sam Darnold?
Well, first of all, the second touchdown he threw to Anderson was about as beautiful a throw as you could make. He literally handed it to him from, 40 yards away. But I would say here's Darnold at this point, and you would probably agree, Colin, because we've talked about Sam Darnold, and I know you like him a lot, but You're also not blind to what he is.
Right.
I think he's shown some very positive snapshots, but he's a little unsettled in the pocket. His feet are always moving. That may be him, or it may be something that needs to settle down. When he sees it right away, he can throw the ball really well, and I think overall that his ball placement must become more consistently precise.
Yeah.
That to me is where Sam Darnold is at this point after five games.
Yeah, Baker's more accurate. Sam's a little bigger athlete. He's got a lot of home run potential. He's a big kid, but I think Josh Rosen throws a very accurate football. I always felt with Sam Darnold, he can play a little fast,
Yep.
He's a little uneven, but I like 15 years. I like his personality, his body type, and his big play potential.
I just really struggle, and it may be him, because he did it in college. For all I know, he could have done it in high school. You probably saw him play in high school.
Yep.
But he's a very unsettled guy with his feet, and it just may be him. But when I watch him on tape, because I'm a purist, as you know, with the position, there are times it's just, hey, calm down, Sam. Calm down. You don't need to be so jumpy.
All right, the Eagles have yet to score 24 points in a game this season.
Yeah.
We know they've got the talent. They have had some injuries. They lost Frank Reich. They lost coaches. What does the tape say is wrong with Philadelphia's offense?
Well, two things. They don't have as much talent as people think on the perimeter. Their wide receivers are not high-level NFL wide receivers. Secondly, a strength a year ago has turned into an issue this year, and that's their offensive line and their pass protection. Individuals are getting beat one-on-one, and they're getting really hurt by stunts and pressures. So the O-line has been a major concern, and they're not running the ball with anywhere near the frequency they did a year ago, so they're becoming one-dimensional with an O-line that's struggling and with a receiving core that's not quite good enough to be a one-dimensional passing offense.
We generally blame quarterbacks. I think Carson Wentz, for what he's given, has done okay.
So do I. I think he's actually played well. I watch him very carefully every week. I think he's thrown the ball really well. He'll probably take a lot of heat for perhaps taking too many hits, but I don't know if that will ever change. I think that's his mentality. I think he stands there and he wants to deliver the football.
Okay, I want to shift to this. There's two or three teams in the NFL, Rams and the Bears, Sean McVay and Matt Nagy. When I watch their offense, it is so clever. It is so fun. It's so multiple. I love watching it, even though I think Trubisky is really, you know, limited. When I watch Dallas's offense, it's not a lot of clever and it's not a lot of creative.
No.
Is that a coaching thing? Are they signaling to guys like me, Dak's limited? I just see Dallas as, vanilla's overused, pedestrian.
Yeah.
I just don't see a ton offensively that makes me go, wow, that's new.
I would agree with you, and we don't know the reason because we're not there, but here's what they do. In their pass game, they run a lot of individual isolation routes. In other words, they ask their wide receivers to win one-on-one versus corners. Those are individual isolation routes. When you have great receivers, you can do that. The Colts did a lot of that when they had Marvin Harrison and Reggie Wayne. What you don't see with the Cowboys are what I would call integrated route concepts, where they use things like stacks, bunches, levels, to do things that actually help their receivers against particular coverage concepts. And when you add that to the fact that Dak Prescott is not a true anticipatory thrower, very often it shuts down your passing game. Now, we don't know if it's because they don't think Dak's good enough. We don't know the answers to these questions. I can only tell you what the tape shows.
Yeah. Is it possible he missed Dez Bryant more?
Dez, when he was in his prime, which was, what, 3-4 years ago? Again,
yeah.
Dak's been in the league. This is his third year. So his first year in the league, Dez was still a good player. But Dez, he kind of evolved into being a possession-type player,
yeah.
And there's a lot of those guys. And I'm sure their feeling was, if he's problematic in the locker room as a possession receiver, since there's a lot of those guys, he's probably not worth the trouble. If he's a superstar, those talent always wins over temperament, but he no longer was a star.
Let's shift to Green Bay. Again, something's not right. I'm not in the room. Now, they don't have much of a running game and haven't for years. But again, let me go back to the creative. You have said on our show several times, Aaron Rodgers, sometimes to a fault, is creative. I don't see a lot of creative beyond Aaron Rodgers. Again, like Dallas, are they asking receivers to win one-on-one battles and just thinking, hey, Aaron, make it happen?
I have actually had a conversation about Aaron Rodgers with someone very smart and very aware this week, because I continue to watch Aaron Rodgers, and he's a frustrating and confusing player to watch, because Rodgers plays with far too much head movement. His helmet is rarely calm. There are many snaps that he plays as if he doesn't appear to know what he's looking at, but then he has plays when he's right on the money. So he's very confusing. He's a tough evaluation, but it also shows how talented he is, because it's really tough to survive in that world where you're not really playing with any sense of timing and rhythm and still be successful. But there's a lot of times where he's the issue, which is hard for people to understand because he's so talented.
Yes.
But just watch him play, Colin, and watch his head. It's very rarely calm. And quarterbacks have to play with the term is a calm helmet. You watch the great quarterbacks, Drew Brees. You watch Tom Brady. Their head is not moving from side to side.
Listen, this is what I've been saying for years. People think I hate Aaron Rodgers. I'm like, listen, some of this stuff's on Aaron. It's not all on everybody else. You look at film. I just watch the games.
And it's all I'm going by as well. You know, I can tell you what the tape shows.
Hey, so let's go to Seattle. Finally, their offense had a life. And here's the thing. Everybody loves the Chiefs and the Rams, myself included. But neither of them plays great defense. Last couple of weeks, Rams haven't played any defense. So what did Seattle do? Did Seattle exploit an issue with the Rams? Their inconsistent pass rush. Their kind of marginal linebacker play. Rams are giving up now a lot of points. Seattle exploited them. What did you see here?
Well, Seattle has really evolved into a totally different team with this new offensive coaching staff. They're a run-first team. Their two backs, Carson and Davis, combined for 31 rushes for 184 yards. And they are now an offense that is a run game foundation offense. And that's where the Rams have struggled this year, defending the run. But Seattle's a run game foundation offense with multiple run game concepts. And Russell Wilson is now a complementary player who's playing with far more control and less freelance randomness, and that's the way they want to play. And in the long term, that will help Russell Wilson.
I watched Seattle. They went and got that Penny kid from San Diego State in the first round.
He's a third back.
They have depth at running. They remind me a little bit of Cleveland. They got Duke Johnson. They got Nick Chubb. They got Carlos Hyde. Seattle's got three backs now, and the young guy, Chubb and Penny, are not getting a ton of snaps, but it does look like, to your point, Seattle said, we're going to make a paradigm shift here, and they took it right to the Rams.
Colin, we've talked about this, you and I, many times. It's so hard to play offense week to week in the NFL when you're relying on a quarterback, any quarterback, it just happens to be Russell Wilson here, to make out-of-structure, improvisational, random plays. It's just too hard. You can't live like that.
Yep. Let's go to Eli Manning. We're going to see him tonight. Odell Beckham comes out and says this. Barkley's been terrific. Saquon Barkley's been just terrific. They have a tight end I like. Odell's very talented. Nate Solder made a lot of money. I'm not sure if he's worth it. But what are you seeing from Eli? What's the tape say?
Well, you know, you said something about Barkley, if I could go there.
Sure.
I don't know if he's been terrific because he's a very interesting kind of runner. He's kind of a reactionary runner who runs away from opposing color rather than I would call a roadmap point of attack runner. You know, he had two runs last week that gained 50 yards, a 20-yarder and a 30-yarder. His other 13 runs gained minus two. And he needs to learn in the NFL to be a sustainer, because if you talk to offensive linemen, they'll tell you that a 3-yard run matters.
Yeah.
He doesn't do that.
Yeah,
he's looking to run away from opposing color, and he's a spectacular guy, so he'll do that, and he'll have great runs. There's no question about that, but they're going to need him to be a sustainer.
By the way, this is what he was at Penn State.
He was exactly that at Penn State.
Yep, he would do nothing, but he'd have two big home runs, and you end up and he's got 124 yards. And 109 are on two runs. So I always said he had a little Reggie Bush in him.
Got a little Barry Sanders in him.
Yeah, I get a fireworks show, but I need 4 yards most of the game, and for 2.5 hours I don't get it. So all right, let's go. Oh boy.
Now, here you go. I did this just for you,
You
Colin.
Did. You and Joel Klatt. I've become my arch nemesis.
We're just truth tellers. That's all we are. We're just truth tellers. We're educating you, Colin.
Okay, so the play of the week involves Baker Mayfield. Let's go, baby.
And then what I like to do is run the play, and hopefully we can have a little Foghat slow ride behind this. Okay, so here's the touchdown pass to Rashad Higgins.
Okay.
But this was beautiful design, but great execution. They go with a tight bunch to the right side of the formation, to the boundary side of the formation. The whole point of this tight bunch was to isolate Rashad Higgins on that corner, Marlon Humphrey. That's what they wanted to do. That's why they did this. So as the routes develop, the two other receivers working inside, Jarvis Landry and David Njoku, this is man-to-man coverage, so they're going to stay inside versus Tavon Young and Tony Jefferson to keep those defenders inside, so you get the one-on-one with Higgins versus Humphrey on the outside. It's an isolation. They're setting up this isolation. It's a great route by Higgins, and he wins. But There's another part of this play, and this is NFL quarterbacking. This will be an ET stunt, meaning the end goes first. Okay, Matt Judon goes first, and then Smith, the tackle, goes second. So the end is the picker. The tackle is the looper. Now stop it right here. You see, this is pressure right in Baker Mayfield's face. He can see it, but you got to stand and deliver. This is NFL quarterbacking, Colin. That's the way to play the position, not to run out of there, but to deliver the throw. And Mayfield is very twitchy. He's very quick with his feet and with his arm.
Look at that. Let's hear it for Baker Mayfield.
There you go. He's the greatest quarterback ever. I think you should get his Hall of Fame jacket ready.
Good stuff today. Good talking to you, Greg Cosell.
All right, Colin. Appreciate it. Thanks.
How about that?
Oh, could you imagine a world where Baker became a Hall of Famer?
Baker's going to play in the league for a long time. If he did, none of this nonsense grabbing your stuff.
Are they going to have your undraftable quote?
I hope they do.
On shirts at sale that weekend.
That'd be funny. No, but I've watched every one of his snaps. He's fun as heck to watch.